Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Gary Gensler, SEC chair, standing firm on crypto a month after he approved spot Bitcoin ETFs.
This is a field that's been rife with fraud and manipulation, and look at all the bankruptcies.
What he sees as the public good that's come from that approval.
Fees came down dramatically. There was a bit of a investor's benefited because there was a bit of a competition there. Investors also benefited from better disclosure.
And the regulators' warning about using AI to trade.
You don't blame a dumb hammer if you're using that to defraud somebody.
Plus, the market's inflation-fueled sell-off, a special election in New York's backyard, and one market-moving mistake, a typo in Lyft's earnings release and a 60% stock pop.
People would know immediately that that's wrong.
People would. The emphasis on people. It's the bots.
It's Wednesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1. Cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. And here we go. It's a Wednesday. Hump day. We're looking at the U.S. equity future.
First up today on the podcast, well, we're not out of the woods yet when it comes to inflation. The consumer price index increased 0.3% in January. CPI measures a basket of consumer goods and services like food, energy, even shelter costs. And the data came in hot, way hotter than expectations, thanks in large part to housing prices that just won't come down. Food prices, too, are still high, rising 0.4% on the month. The market's sold off on the data because investors have been waiting for the Fed to take its foot off the brake when it comes to the economy. If inflation stays high, higher than that 2% target rate, the central bank will wait longer to cut interest rates. So, a sell-off.
A pretty massive sell-off on Wall Street yesterday following that hotter-than-expected January inflation data. The Dow and the S&P each were down by about 1.4%. The Dow actually had its worst day since March of last year. The Nasdaq was down by 1.8%. Russell 2000 small stocks got hit even harder. It was their worst day for the Russell 2000 since June of 2022. So you're going back a pretty long time over all of this. Treasury yields were not spared from any of this either. They were up pretty sharply as Treasury prices got hit. The 2-year this morning is yielding 4.6%, just above that. The 10-year's at 4.285%, and all of those numbers picked up drastically. Everything moved right when we got that hotter-than-expected CPI number. Here's Double Line's Jeffrey Gundlach on Closing Bell yesterday with his reaction to the market move.
I think the market has had tremendously overpriced the amount of cuts this year. It was down to almost a certainty of 6. And it seemed that the Fed, since they weren't going to move in March, per the words of the chairman, that means they're getting started in May. And then there's this thing called the election that I don't know, they probably aren't primarily focused on that, but to have 6 rate cuts between May and the end of the year always seemed like a lot to me.
A lot to him and a lot to other people, too, if you can start in May.
But we totally knew that all last week. And even the week before, we knew exactly what he just said. We did. We knew that we've been talking about it every day.
I think yesterday raised the question.
We're talking about every day that we're down to maybe 3, and much later, it was that inflation number.
I don't even know if they can cut in May. If you get another hotter than expected number in February, and Leisman was saying yesterday that with seasonal adjustments, you might see higher numbers both in January and February. If you get that, it's a lot harder to say, okay, we're ready to start cutting.
Otherwise, why would we have asked at least 10 times, why is the market not selling off? Because now rate cuts are much later and much fewer. And every single person said, because earnings have been so strong. And we actually said, so you don't need a rate cut for the multiple to expand. If the earnings part of the right. of the PE goes up, you don't need it. So the market's not overvalued. But I still think we had this notion, maybe we were Goldilocks. We got this great economy, you know, with jobs and GDP, and inflation seemed like it was headed in the right direction until that was rug was pulled out.
Although but 2%,
I don't want to overstate 2% either.
We're from new highs. You're still talking about the Dow and the S&P.
But the 10-year really. I mean that
highest yields in 2 months.
And we haven't seen it move like 20 basis points.
Right. It looks like something. It feels like something. And the question is, does it continue?
Probably broke
right earnings.
Probably broke through a resistance level where you could 5% could be back. Remember, we were at 5, and then all of a sudden we just plunged from 5% on the 10-year.
There's looking at 2 months. If we look at a little longer term, yeah, it gives you a little more context.
It came down as quickly. I guess it could go up just as quickly. We don't want to overstate anything. Gundlach did make an interesting point about. I mean, the November is coming. Winter's coming.
Well, that part we always knew. Shares of Lyft soaring by more than 60%. This happened after hours in trading, but it was really for like a hot minute. It then pulled back after the CFO clarified that the earnings release that the company had put out contained an error at issue. The release said that one of Lyft's profit margins was expected to grow by 500 basis points in 2024. The margin was only expected to expand by 50 basis points. In fact, that's what it was supposed to be. That inflated margin likely triggered a buying frenzy by algorithmic traders. This all happening before most people could even digest the numbers. Earnings of 18 cents per share beat estimates by a dime. Revenue was in line, and the forecast for current quarter bookings came in higher than expected. Lyft saying that it expects to generate positive free cash flow for the full year for the first time.
You would think most metrics in an earnings report, if you overstate it by a factor of 10, I mean, that's an exponential mistake. You'd say people would know immediately that that's wrong.
People would. The emphasis on
people. But when but also, if you're at 1.6 for gross margins and you're going up to 2.1, that's good. That's better. It's the right direction. But it's not out of the question that if you did something right, some other company could go from 1.6 to 6.6, right?
I mean, this is where I was feeling good about.
6.6 is not like a 40% margin. It's a 6%
but
margin.
But I think the key is that it was algorithmic trading that was doing it.
And you couldn't
feel
do it
good
with
about
Lyft.
Us versus
it's too,
AI.
It's too hard
just
a business.
It's an if-then program, and everybody was hallucinating. And this is the AI problem.
Right. That's what I think.
Right. That's all it is. That's all it is.
So you would.
It's an if-then program. It sees that it's better than expected by 10 times.
You not being a machine yet.
Yeah.
We're still here. But you.
I wouldn't have pressed any buttons because it would have been. It would have taken me a lot of time to try to figure it out.
I don't know if I would have said, wow, you know, Uber, this is a really thin margin business and it's tough and they got, you know, you don't know how you're paying. There's a lot of problems with trying to expand margins in the ride sharing business. But 6%. Is not a rich margin number for a lot of customers.
Yeah,
I mean, 30 or 40%.
But if you understand what the business is.
Right. If you understand the business, there's no way Lyft's going up 500 basis points.
Let's hear it for Queens. Let's hear it for Long Island.
NBC News projecting that Democrat Tom Suozzi has won the New York special election to replace expelled former Congressman George Santos. The election result flips a red seat to blue, further narrows the Republican slim majority in the House of Representatives. It means that in a full House vote, Republicans can now allow only two defectors to break ranks and still pass legislation along party lines. A lot of people can't really tell what this means because of the storm.
Go ahead. Hit me with yours first.
All right.
Go ahead. You came
I think
first.
That the storm stopped after by noon. So a lot of Democrats don't really get out of bed till afternoon, typically. So they were all ready to go vote. And what did you say back to me?
I said, well, you know, if we're going to play generalizations, then Republicans tend to be older
and don't want to go out in the snow
because they might slip and fall.
So both of those things may have...
Look, I think it was... What you're really probably dealing with is a known quantity. Swazi is a known quantity to that district. They just got burned by George Santos in a really bad way and embarrassed. So the idea that they were going to go with another unknown candidate who was put up, not great. Swazi, by the way, Biden did not come in and endorse him or come in and campaign for him. And Swazi actually took some steps to distance himself from Biden. He called him old.
He also
was very strong on immigration, which is a big problem in New York City right now.
Right. But, well, the question is whether this really, I mean, 2022 was a Democrat, the big surprise.
Yep. It wasn't
even a red trickle, but to everybody. They're supposed to be a red wave, and it wasn't even a red trickle.
In purple districts, you are going to have moderates trying to distance themselves from either of the candidates at the top of the ticket to say, you know me, I'm a known quantity, here's what I will do for you.
She was 9 points ahead on the immigration issue, but she was still beneath him just in the polling. And then there was the snowstorm, which nobody knows how that.
Well, the other issue is Democrats.
People do say that Democrats did. Yeah.
No, but it's early voting before in the days leading up to it.
But
Democrats shovel their own driveways. Same.
Okay. Yeah, that's another. Probably none of these generalizations are a good idea.
No, they're not. I think it was a very unique situation with someone who burned this district, and they didn't. Swazi's a known quantity, and he is moderate.
They called him Sanctuary City Swazi, is what.
Now he's talking pretty toughly against.
Well, that's what they were saying.
Any immigrants who have broken laws, he thinks should be deported.
Speaking of close votes, House Republicans voting to impeach Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas yesterday, just the second time in U.S. history that a cabinet member has been impeached, the vote passing 214 to 213. Three Republicans voted with the Democrats, two Democrats were absent. House Republicans allege that Mayorkas intentionally violated federal immigration laws and blocked congressional oversight of the Homeland Security Department. The Democrat-controlled Senate will now take up the issue and decide whether to send the trial to a special committee to hear evidence or dismiss the impeachment articles.
No, they're not going to decide that. We know they're not going to do that.
I don't think they're going to.
Nothing's going to happen from that. Yeah, it was the same three people last time. Mike Gallagher, who's now not running again.
Right, not running.
And Ken Buck and one other guy.
They had two Democrats who didn't show up for the vote, and I think two Republicans.
Scalise came back and put him over. And it was weird because one of the Republicans, the last time it happened, changed his vote to a no so that it could be, because a tie, you couldn't bring it up again. And they said they'd bring it up again, and they did, and they passed it. And it's the first time it's happened in, you know, over 100 years. Nothing's going to happen from it, but.
No, I know, but just we're constantly now using impeachment in this sort of way that just is.
I think this is the first time it's been used by Republicans, isn't it? The Democrats used it a couple of times recently.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, Wall Street's top regulator, the chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Gary Gensler, on set on the markets, the crypto boom, the world's richest man, and so much more.
We really don't want our advisors hallucinating on mushrooms, and you don't really want your advisors to hallucinate with AI. There's still a responsibility to ensure that you have accurate information that you're putting out.
We'll be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, cue.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
It has now been just over a month since the SEC approved a slate of spot Bitcoin ETFs opening trading in the cryptocurrency markets to a wider group of investors. Bitcoin itself has jumped in recent days. This morning, you can take a look right now. It's over $50,000, sitting just at about $51,601. Joining us right now on the set for the first time to talk about Bitcoin and a lot more is SEC Chair Gary Gensler. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So it's a month later, and I think we're all curious about how you think this is going, not just in terms of what's happened to the price, but in terms of what you think is happening inside this market and whether you think it's, quote unquote, working.
Well, look, we focus on investor protection and, of course, the issuers raising money. So this product, we've had similar products in gold and silver ETFs, you right. call them. They're technically exchange-traded products. We approved a group of about 11 at one time. This was not the first way you could buy or express a risk in Bitcoin. But as we like to say, we're merit neutral. This was not in any way like an approval of Bitcoin. That existed. It's right. just how to trade it in these exchange-traded products.
We've had both a futures-based Ether and Bitcoin ETF before, and I'm curious sort of how you think that this is going to impact the price of these things, given that, by the way, interestingly, Anthony Pompliano was just on earlier this week and was saying that so few Bitcoins are actually moving. And what we should think of that.
In merit neutral, I think it's a little less than neutral, Mr. Chairman. It almost was, we called it grudgingly when you finally got it. From the court case sort of forced in. Is it really just neutral, or wasn't there a little bit of a, we're not sure about this thing, in dire beware?
Let me say it this way.
Yeah.
We're merit neutral if somebody's complying with the laws.
Okay.
So if they're giving full, fair, and truthful disclosures to the American public, who gets to decide on their
right.
investments.
But okay? you're so
but
smart,
within,
you're at MIT, and people listen to your what you think about Bitcoin. And it is troublesome to me if I look at it and I see all the merits of it, and someone that taught about it and understands it seems to have an opinion that maybe it's, I don't know, pet rockish or something.
I get your words about pet rocks and so forth. But I think we also have an investor education responsibility at the SEC, particularly about those investments that are non-compliant with either the securities laws
or commodities.
Commodities laws and so forth. So here we have an asset class, all of these 15, 20,000 crypto tokens,
yep.
many of which, without prejudging anyone, many of which are actually something called investment contracts or securities, and the platforms upon which you trade, the intermediaries.
Right.
They're not like in this building, NASDAQ, that has protections and against fraud, manipulation, and the like.
Just seeing people lose their shirt on with NASDAQ stocks,
you can
too.
Lose because there's risk.
Right.
There's risk
right.
in investments. But what we try to do as a society is take some of the fraud and manipulation risk out of the markets by
right.
regulation.
Is that the problem, though? It's not necessarily Bitcoin, the underlying asset, but more the froth and the potential for fraudsters to use it that has
well,
been
Well, this is
concern?
A field, Becky, that's been rife with fraud and manipulation, and look at all the bankruptcies, and you've had on this set
right.
people talking about those various bankruptcies, and it's not just one entity, it's entity after entity after entity, and then investors are just lining up in the bankruptcy court.
What do you make of, this goes to the underlying piece of this, you've heard Jamie Dimon say that he would close it down, that basically, Bitcoin you've seen the comments, right? It's not just that he closed down, that he would say it's, you know, used by drug dealers and used by folks who are doing all sorts of illicit and terrible things. There's very few things that trade today that people talk about like that. Now, there are obviously frauds and things that happen, but maybe not like this.
Like the dollar is like 100 times more.
Well, I know so. That's your perspective, but I'm just
but
I'm
dollar,
curious how you think about that.
That's true, though. This is how much has been money laundered with Bitcoin. This is how much. This is Bitcoin. This is dollar.
Yes, Joe. But look, here's the Jamie Dimon quote.
I've always been deeply opposed to crypto, Bitcoin, et cetera. You pointed out the only true use case for it is criminals, drug traffickers, anti-money laundering, tax avoidance. If I was the government, I'd close it down.
What is your opinion? And what is your opinion that we have something trading on the exchange for the public that has this type of use case, at least as described by the president of one of the largest financial institutions in the country?
It's the leading market share in ransomware. And that's publicly known.
Right.
You know, it's the token of choice for ransomware. Joe, if I can say, the U.S. dollar, the euro, the yen, you have the whole society using it as a medium of exchange. We buy our cups of coffee, as I see here.
Right.
We get paid in dollars or yen or euro. And you have a whole central bank and support for one currency generally per economic region. That we don't have here. So there is a very real economic difference.
Which is part of the attraction, since it's decentralized and you can't have a profligate central bank.
It's not that decentralized, Joe.
Well, I know you're saying because of the ETFs, but really
no,
it
no,
is.
No,
and
it's
for
not
DeFi
that decentralized
and everything.
Because look how finance tends towards centralization since antiquity.
Right.
So what do we have? We have a handful of 3 to 6 core so-called crypto exchanges.
I understand, but the asset itself, the way that, you know, the distributed ledger.
That's how the ledger. Now, how many times do you have people on this show that say, I want to invest in something because how the books and records are kept? I mean, Joe, really? It's just an accounting ledger, a clever.
It's a ledger that everyone has, and can't be double counted. It's almost immutable. That's why people think it has inherent value.
So you trust it more than an Oracle database, or you trust it more?
I trust
than
it more than a lot of than a lot of the Bitcoin bulls say they trust it a lot more than the central bank that enables the fiscal authorities to spend money to the tune of $33 trillion.
That's everybody's investment choice. But
and then I think about how many things can be used in a deleterious way. Of course, but that has nothing to do with the underlying thing that you're using itself. I mean, I can go run a car into a parade and run over, you know, 40 people. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have cars. Does it?
No. You should have cars.
I wasn't going to use guns because, God, I don't want to trigger, so to speak, anyone on the set. But
when the use case of a particular thing that you're buying and selling as an investment is just speculative investment.
How many of the 90% of the people that own Bitcoin are using it for ransomware? There must be another use case that makes it so attractive to so many people.
Speculative investing.
Okay. Let me ask a separate question, which is just to pivot this, because I think the next sort of order event question is what happens to Ethereum. For those in the crypto world, they all want to know how you're thinking about that. And really, if Ethereum is a security, you know, how does that analysis differ from how you would think about Bitcoin?
What we did in January was cabined to one set of filings. We have other filings. You're absolutely right. In front of us, but I'm not going to prejudge it for you or the audience. That's something that a 5-member commission discusses and reviews.
Let me ask you a different question, which has to do with indexing. So much of our market is focused on indexes. And you focus historically, or at least the SEC's historically focused on individual securities, right? Individual companies and the like. I'm curious whether you think that the system as it is today actually is working in the right way, meaning a lot of the valuations today you could ascribe to the fact that certain securities are in certain indexes.
It relates
to what's happening to Bitcoin, by the way.
So it's a great innovation going back decades ago, Jack Bogle, and as you know, you probably interviewed him when he was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Invented this idea that you could democratize finance, that rather than buying individual stocks, you can buy the basket. Why buy the needle when you can buy the haystack, he would say. And so it was very cost efficient, and it's a way the American public can really participate in the stock market at very low cost. It's also led to some concentration, some centralization in finance, because when you look at the large index providers, if you're right. in the index or not in the index, it can be very consequential.
And these days, it's a handful. But the other piece of it is, these days, it's a handful of stocks, which often represent a majority the entire index.
The reason you're looking, Gary, the reason you're looking
for individual value.
The reason you're looking for the needle in the haystack is to find the needle to get rid of all the hay. I mean, who wants the haystack? That makes no sense.
Well, but actually, economists, Joe, I mean, you know this, have studied it.
But I thought about it. It's like
it's the safety.
No,
factor.
But they've studied it that you get the benefit of diversity.
And Vanguard does
you
not.
Get 500 guesses.
Vanguard doesn't have a Bitcoin, right? That's.
Vanguard is not doing it yet.
They're not doing it.
Only of the biggies that didn't do it, correct?
Yeah, I don't think Vanguard actually.
They did not submit an application.
Right. Exactly.
Do you expect, if we're all sitting here at this table together in a year from now, that this dozen or so approved ETFs, that there's only like two or three gets even more concentrated? Or do you think that there's going to be, you know, dozens of these things?
That's really up to the market to decide. But what you saw when this happened is fees came down dramatically. There was a bit of a investors benefited
right.
because there was a bit of a competition there. Investors also benefited from better disclosure because right. they have to do things called registering with the Securities and Exchange Commission on those products. And investors got the benefit of any surveillance by the various stock right. exchanges. But again, these are highly speculative, risky assets in which to invest.
Let me pivot again to a big headline that happened actually last night. We just talked to the CEO of the company, CEO of Lyft, just moments ago. That stock popped in this remarkable way, in part because in the press release, they had an extra zero on their margin for the quarter. What is the SEC think about something like that? Is that something where you'd fine a company for that kind of mistake? Is that something where you say that's part of the business? Obviously, investors who bought on that, it might have been algorithmic trading. I want to actually talk to you about the impact of that as well.
Okay, I think it's a responsibility of companies to ensure that they put out information to the public that's accurate. I can't speak to that one matter. I don't even you're telling me something I learned about a half an hour ago. But in general, companies are supposed to put out accurate information to the public.
But when they don't.
If it's an accident.
Let's say it's an accident.
Correction immediately.
Let's say a correction happens immediately. We can take Lyft out of this. I'll say that the Sorkin, Quick, Kernan and Co., we accidentally put out a
Kernan
press release.
Kernan especially.
We put out a press release accidentally with some misinformation. We corrected it within 10 minutes. It was clearly not intentional on our behalf or on our part. Is somebody from the SEC calling us today and saying, hey, guys, we got a problem. We're going to have to send you a font. Like, how does the SEC think about these things?
Let me see if I can just generalize and pivot to artificial intelligence. I gave a talk yesterday up at Yale about this. And so it's sort of like, what is the liability or responsibility of somebody using an AI model? And the AI model might hallucinate.
Right.
And look, we really don't want our advisors hallucinating on mushrooms, and you don't really want your advisors to hallucinate with AI. There's still a responsibility to ensure that you have accurate information that you're putting out. And with the use of AI, that you have certain guardrails in place, especially if you knowingly know that it might hallucinate.
What if it was just a human error,
though? Front run in a market.
I mean, that's an interesting idea. This morning I was looking at it, and it was algorithmic trading that bought into this. Most humans didn't react fastly enough, or quickly, wouldn't have reacted quickly enough. If you had a human eye checking it over, you might not have thought it was rational to have a 500 basis point increase in your in your projections for your margins.
And Becky, I think, and again, stepping aside from that one event last night, I really just learned about it. But whether it's a mistake or whether it's intentional, because also you could have people trying to defraud the market by putting out fake news releases.
Right.
Sure.
And you know, so bad actors have a new tool to try to defraud the market. But and that it's to protect the public from that.
How much empathy do you have or sympathy do you have for algorithmic trading, though? I mean, if it's...
Well, it's a tool. It's existed. Algorithmic trading has existed for decades. It's getting faster, less latency. and it's also getting more sophisticated. The math is getting more sophisticated. And so if you're deploying a model, you want to make sure that the model has certain guardrails, really to protect your bottom line and to protect the market.
Let me ask you about another big topic that we've been talking about for the past week and a half now, which is the ruling in the Tesla case around governance and the compensation that Elon Musk was paid. And I'm curious about it because part of the ruling goes at the idea that the board of Tesla was, quote unquote, not independent, even though that these quote unquote, independent directors were supposedly independent, that they weren't, and that they therefore did not negotiate in good faith, and that when they then endorsed this compensation agreement, the shareholders effectively, I think the judge would say, I don't know if she would use this word, were effectively defrauded and therefore voted with misinformation. What say you? Because I think part of it is all of these companies are trying to comply with the rules around independent directors, et cetera. And where's the SEC play in this?
So it's the matters you talked about, I'm not going to speak about, but generally those matters are a matter of state law and state corporate governance. The SEC has some role with regard to corporate governance about the disclosures around executive compensation, the disclosures about the controls of the company and the like. But those matters that you're speaking about really are generally a matter of state law.
But to a large degree, that case was about defrauding investors, shareholders, that I would assume come under the purview of the SEC and whether they're being provided with the right information, because underneath this entire case is this idea that these directors are telling the public that they're independent, but in fact that they're not. And is the SEC supposed to step in those roles and say, you know, here's a problem here?
Again, I hope the viewing public understands that as the chair of a law enforcement agency, I'm not going to speak about any one circumstance, one company, and certainly other people's cases in state courts. But yes, you're right. The Securities and Exchange Commission is a disclosure-based regulatory agency, and it's about ensuring that the information is accurate, material information.
Right.
There's not omissions, and that we protect the public against fraud, manipulation, whether it's in these securities or it's in, yes, Joe, crypto securities.
Right. Okay, I got a more complicated one for you, and I don't know the truth of the matter, but there have been lots of reports, mostly in the Wall Street Journal, suggesting that Elon Musk is taking illicit drugs. I don't know if this is right or wrong or otherwise. The question I have, though, is the SEC supposed to look at this? Is somebody supposed to look at this? Is someone not supposed to look at this? Is the board supposed to look at this? What? How would you think about it? I'm serious. You run this governing body over investors, and I think there are some investors who are trying to understand what they're supposed to think of these articles.
Look, again, I understand you have a role to play as a very talented on-air financial journalist. I've got a role to play. It's also chairing a law enforcement agency. With respect, I'm not going to be pulled into that. But we are disclosure-based. The companies discuss their material risks, that investors get to decide based on those material risks whether they want to invest in that company or sell the stock.
Should companies that have CEOs they use illicit drugs include this in some kind of warning? No, I'm just asking the question.
Privacy issue?
I don't know.
You know how many drunk CEOs there are
first thing in the morning? I'm not sure the stories are even.
All of Silicon Valley is experimenting with hallucinogens.
They may be. You
should have maybe at some point.
I probably should have.
I'm not kidding. You get to know yourself a little bit.
Help my ability
introspection.
To do this show.
Yeah.
You mentioned hallucination. I'm going to come back to artificial intelligence. It makes it easy. Smart. But like if a company is using artificial intelligence in a material way, it's really about the bottom line, their prospects and the like, and that program has a tendency to hallucinate, they have to consider those risks and whether it's a material risk to invest.
Can I just say, the last time I heard you kind of come back to an issue that you were very centrally focused on was crypto. So this sounds to me like you are issuing a message. The reason you're here today to talk about this is you want to issue a message to any company that is going to engage with artificial intelligence that they will be held responsible for any problems with that AI.
Well, in two ways, Becky. It's in if you're an investment advisor giving advice to the public, or you're a broker-dealer using it, to remember you still have a responsibility to put your investors ahead of the advisor or the broker-dealer. So that's a conflict issue. But also, if you're using it, that you still have responsibilities not to defraud the public. And so that's about sort of having some guardrails. Let's make sure you don't front run, meaning take an investor's choice to buy or sell a stock and try to get ahead of them, put your interest ahead of them and so forth. So yes, I do think that that's important because we, regardless of the tool you use, whether you use a hammer, whether you use just a little bit of algebra, or you use artificial intelligence.
But it's not okay to blame a dumb AI program that did something we weren't anticipating.
That's right. You don't blame a dumb hammer if you're using that to defraud somebody. I'm just trying to say AI is a tool, but when you use that tool to do bad things.
Oh my God. Now it's okay for AI, but not Bitcoin.
Well, how do you see them?
No, I'm just saying you'd say it's a tool, but if you use it to do nefarious things, then then you're saying it's not AI's fault. Well, it's the same case.
Because
you just made the same case for Bitcoin.
With Bitcoin's a non-security, but if
now you're splitting hairs again.
No, I'm not, Joe.
For every Jamie Dimon, I can raise you one Paul Tudor Jones, one Larry Fink, one Stan Druckenmiller, one, I'll raise you all, Peter Thiel, Mark Andreessen.
They don't run the SEC.
I think we've established that Joe is not merit neutral.
That's right. Chair Gensler, they're playing the music, but I do have to ask you one other question, which has to do with ESG. There's been a remarkable backlash on it. Even a backlash around disclosures around climate and some of these other metrics that you've been talking about. And I'm curious how you think about that, because you're seeing it from different states and investors, pension funds and the like, and it's become political.
Andrew, if you look at the top 1,000 companies, the sort of the Russell 1000, about 90% of them are already talking about climate risk somewhere in their annual filings. A little over half are already disclosing something around their emissions, greenhouse gas emissions. I think therein lies a role for the SEC to help bring consistency, comparability in that decision usefulness. But we are not a climate regulator. We are not a climate risk regulator. We're a securities regulator.
Right, but there are some companies now that are scared to disclose some of their pledges or other things, because if they do, which you would say they should.
No, I do not. We just
then
say.
Then they're saying that certain states, Texas, Florida, and others are going to say, you can't do business in our state, or we're not going to invest in you, or what have
Andrew,
you.
Andrew, there are many companies already making their disclosures, and if they're material, you have to make sure that they're accurate and they're not misleading. That's the same role as whether it's about the executives, and it's the same thing if about these risk if they're material.
Okay. This has been fabulous. Come on back to the table again. It's great to see you in person.
All right. Good to be
thank
with you,
you
Andrew.
Very much.
Becky.
Chair Gensler, thank you.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
And that is Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears. Follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And tell us what you think. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, take a minute, look at your phone, and hit tap to rate. You can rate Squawk Pod. Go on, give us 5 stars, or even write a brief review with your thoughts. It takes a few minutes, and it helps other listeners discover this podcast. That's it. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.